This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the president-elect of the United States, Donald John Trump.
It is Inauguration Week, and on this Martin Luther King weekend, it is anything but peaceful. Civil rights icon John Lewis gets caught on the other end of Donald Trump's Twitter fingers.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
But the show must go on.
A clear exchange or transfer of government really makes you proud to be an American.
Time to watch the country's main event from Florida's very own embassy.
Be able to view it from the windows here at Florida House. The day of the swearing in of our new president, we'll watch the helicopter take off a block over when President and Mrs. Obama leave.
And when it comes to the 2018 change in power in Florida, Attorney John Morgan says he's on the fence about running for governor.
Now my son, with all due respect to politicians, my son Matt said, Daddy, why would you want to be a politician? Politicians are jokes.
All that and more coming up on episode 90 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. We have a jam-packed episode as I continue my coverage from Washington, D.C. But there is never a dull moment in Florida. For instance, the two dominant political parties chose their leadership this weekend. The Republican Party of Florida re-elected State Representative Blaise Angiolo as party chair, and the Florida Democratic Party chose Stephen Biddle to succeed Allison Tent. Oh, and then I received word that Orlando lawyer John Morgan was jumping into the race for governor.
I think today was a test run of the message that he might deploy if in fact he does run.
That's Bay News 9's Capitol reporter Troy Kinsey, who flew from Tallahassee to Pensacola to hear John Morgan lay the groundwork for a possible run, which could be against the wishes of his family. But before we get into that, it's the annual remembrance of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
That's part of his famous I Have a Dream speech. President-elect Donald Trump has pulled himself into another war of words on Twitter. Now with Georgia Congressman John Lewis, a civil rights icon who marched with Martin Luther King and in 1965 suffered a skull fracture during the police crackdown on marches at the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
You do not consider him a legitimate president. Why is that?
I think the Russians participated in having this man get elected. I don't plan to attend inauguration.
It was that comment from Lewis on NBC News which led Trump to say the veteran activist was talk, 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 no action or result. Of course, Trump faced swift rebuke across party lines for his attack and very poor choice of words during the Martin Luther King weekend. This just further highlighting Trump's problems with African Americans and people of color. And the hits keep on coming.
Yes, this is real life. This is really happening. On January 20th, I, Donald J. Trump, will become the 45th president of the United States. And then 2 months later, Mike Pence will become the 46th.
Alec Baldwin had a field day on Saturday Night Live making fun of Mr. Trump's first press conference since his win, which followed news that in addition to Russian meddling, the Kremlin might have unverified compromising information on Trump.
Guys, no, I do not want to talk about the PP. I want to talk about what is really important, which is jobs, okay? Because I am going to bring back a thick stream of jobs back in this country. The biggest, strongest, steadiest stream you've ever seen. This country will be literally showered with jobs because I am a major whiz at jobs. And this will be a golden opportunity for me as president to make a big splash. Those with me. I know you're in. How about you? You're in? You're in? You're in? You're in? You're in? Okay. Next question.
Now, the actual press conference was very unusual and chaotic. You didn't know what was going to happen next.
I was offered $2 billion to do a deal in Dubai. Number of deals. And I turned it down.
It ended with a promise of him turning over his business dealings to his sons, where he brought back out his signature line, if they don't do a good job.
If they do a bad job, I'll say, you're fired.
So here's a preview of what you'll be hearing on Inauguration Day. It's a little snippet of official rehearsals taking place.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President-elect of the United States, Donald John Trump.
Florida plans to celebrate in a big way. Governor Rick Scott and other top supportive Republicans will flock to Washington. The Palm Beach Post reports Scott will host a Florida Sunshine Ball on Wednesday night and a watch party along the inaugural parade route on Inauguration Day. First Lady Ann Scott will host a tea time the afternoon before inauguration, both events sponsored by Scott's Let's Get to Work Political Action Committee. You're listening to The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Now, if you're going to be in town for the festivities, that is Washington, D.C., I highly suggest a visit to Florida's embassy. Yes, Florida has its very own embassy, and it's like no other. I'm sure you're listening to this with plenty of questions. Like, can you call the Florida House after having a wild time in D.C., and maybe you've lost your license and essentially stuck in the District of Columbia with no way home? It can happen, folks, trust me. But let's learn more about the Florida House and what it's really all about. The Florida House on Capitol Hill, mind you, not to be confused with the Florida House, like the Florida Senate in Tallahassee. Here is its president and CEO, Bart Hudson.
Nice to meet you, Tramell Gomes. Thanks for having me. This is such a beautiful office.
And forgive this, too. I'm going to invite you into my bathroom, but I want you to see a view.
Okay, yes. Let's see. Your bathroom.
Look at the view out my bathroom.
Oh, my gosh.
All the way to Washington.
Right on the commode.
Isn't that extraordinary?
That is a nice view. Wait, let me get a picture.
Absolutely. Imagine that. Even using the bathroom here gives you one of the best views in Washington.
Washington Monument.
Talk about taking your time in the morning. Like, you don't have to rush.
Again, I highly recommend adding the Florida House on your itinerary during your next visit to Capitol Hill.
So, Bart Hudson, welcome to the Rotunda. And where are we?
Tramell, we are very fortunate to be in Florida House, Florida's embassy in Washington, D.C.
This is an actual embassy?
we are self-titled, but we like to think of ourselves as an embassy for the people of the state of Florida. 43 years ago, our former senator and his wife created Florida House with the expectation that Floridians would have a sense of community here in Washington, D.C., especially here on Capitol Hill. So we are still going strong after that length of time, over four decades.
Yeah. And that's Senator Lawton Chiles.
Lawton Chiles. Now, we will use the senator as our point of reference, but it really was his wife, Rhea Chiles, that had the idea and the tenacity and the intelligence and the drive to create the house. Mm-hmm. At the time, she found a dilapidated row house right here on Capitol Hill. As we're sitting here, you see our neighbors are the Supreme Court, the Library of Congress, and the Folger Shakespeare Library. But she had a vision, again, for Florida's embassy, and she bought the structure for $125,000. And you can imagine the value of it now, but we're just one block over to the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And as you and I have been sitting here, we've watched the sunset behind the Capitol and behind the Washington Monument.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get better than Florida House on Capitol Hill.
This is prime real estate. What a steal for that. I can only guess how much it's worth now.
It's well into the millions. Yeah. So it was a great investment on Mrs. Child's part. The state of Florida, Trammell, does not own Florida House. The people of the state own it through a nonprofit foundation. So no tax dollars support the house. It's all by the generosity of Floridians that we exist.
So, like, what function does it serve?
Well, you rang the doorbell and you were greeted with a glass of fresh Florida orange juice.
Mm-hmm.
We want mom and dad and the two kids or the grandparents more often now that are bringing their families to Washington to have a resource that will help them map out a trip to their nation's capital. The business community uses the house. If they're up from Florida and don't have a local office, they're welcome to come and use the facilities. The congressional delegation very often uses for constituent purposes Florida House. And then we offer educational programs as well. So there's just this myriad of use for Florida House.
So how long have you been in this job, Bart?
I've been here. This will start my 18th year.
18? Wow.
18 years. I will tell you I grew up in it, but I don't think you'll believe me. But I've been fortunate to be here for 18 years. Have witnessed some absolutely extraordinary events, people, times in that length of service here at Florida House. And I will tell you that of all the people on Capitol Hill, I'm probably the most fortunate.
Really?
Yes.
So what's your fondest memory over the years of either an event that you hosted here or a person that sticks out, that has graced the hallways and the rooms of the Florida House?
Oh, Trammell, that's so difficult, and there's no way I could pick one. But, you know, we've hosted most of the congressional delegation at some point, the great statesmen of our time through here. Probably the most poignant event would be September 11th, of course. As I turned onto 2nd Street, the first plane hit, and by the time I got into Florida House, the second plane had hit, and truly Capitol Hill looked as though you're familiar with stepping on an ant bed and how the ants just scatter. Well, that was Capitol Hill that day, and it was interesting. Our two senators at the time were hosting their state staff for training purposes, so they had no place to go. Everybody else was headed home, headed to some type of secure location. And so there were about 20 folks from Florida who had nowhere to go. And so we congregated here at Florida House. And about mid-morning, CNN knocked on the door and said, "Can we film from your roof?" And that's because there was such an amazing visual of the Capitol, and the Pentagon was burning behind it. So we had probably 30 or 40 members of Congress climb on our roof to be interviewed that day. So, you know, if I had to pick the most poignant, that would be it.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Trammell Gomes.
But then I've had such great times. We've hosted Vice President and Mrs. Cheney here for dinner. We've hosted the Prince of Monaco for lunch. We have hosted ambassadors for discussions on getting the King and Queen of Spain to Pensacola.
Yeah.
Book launches. So there again, there's just such a diverse use of the house that there's not a dull moment.
So I see a photo, a painting here.
Yes.
Who's that?
That's Adele Graham, Senator Bob Graham's wife. And Adele was a senior vice chairman when he was here in Washington. Dear friends of Florida House, we're fortunate to serve a board of trustees of almost 120. The First Lady of the state is asked to be the honorary chair. So Ann Scott is the honorary chair of our board. And she's amazing in that role, in both in her support and personal support, and then her support in helping us fundraise for the House. Senior vice chairs are the spouses of the senators, and Mrs. Graham was a senior vice chair.
Wow, this is good. And I see some shells, and I'm just looking around your office that has all the Florida nuggets that you can expect.
We want you to realize through the windows that you're in Washington, but when you're within the confines of the house, we want you to remember that that you're also a Floridian. Mm-hmm. So you'll see the shells and the citrus and the artwork that we have an extraordinary collection of art here for the public to view. Beanie Backus, Highwayman art, any number of pieces that would be of interest to visitors who are coming to Washington.
I think we're the only state that is in the position of having something, a setup like this, an embassy.
Yes, yes. And I'm delighted that you know that. I'm delighted. We are the only state. Other states have tried. California, Texas, Illinois have all tried to replicate the model, but they tried to do it with tax dollars. And there's more important and different things to use tax revenue for. So we've been able to sustain because of our nonprofit status. Mrs. Childs had envisioned all of Second Street to be State Embassy Row. Yeah. And that was great as long as we had this prime location. But it didn't happen. We would love to see other folks do it, but for now, yes, we're the only state to have an embassy in Washington.
Man, that's something.
Yes.
So what's coming up into the future? We talked earlier about inaugurations.
Sure.
You've gone through how many so far?
This will be my fourth here in Washington. And I've got to tell you, Tramiel, that's one of the most exciting times to be in Washington just because of what's going on, but the history that's being made. The clear exchange or transfer of government really makes you proud to be an American and to be able to view it from the windows here at Florida House. The day of the swearing in of our new president, we'll watch the helicopter take off a block over when President and Mrs. Obama leave. Mm-hmm. So We will see hundreds, if not thousands, of people here at Florida House because we're open to the public during this great occasion. Typically, as I shared, it's an opportunity to gather cold, but it's going to be 60 degrees next week, so that won't be quite so bad. But that's always such a joyous time for us. Just last week, we witnessed the swearing-in of the new Congress, so all the new members. And we have a significant number in our delegation. We're the third largest delegation with 29 members. But, you know, these are different times. And with the change in the complexity of the government, it's going to be a fascinating deal to watch.
Yeah, and what a mix in this class. A former governor, a returning senator, and so many others. A lot of freshmen and
yes.
Changeover, first-time congressman and woman making it into the fray. So they all come and visit and host events here?
They host events. We do, educational projects. One of our signature projects is the Florida Congressional Delegation Intern Series. Mm-hmm. And so during the summer, we'll bring all of the congressional, the Florida delegation interns to Florida House, and that can be as many as 100, 150 within the 29 offices. And we'll bring them to Florida House every Thursday for 8 weeks, and we'll provide a different member of Congress to speak to them. And this is the closest that the interns get to the actual member.
Yeah.
And it's a very informal setting. They get to ask the members questions that you would never ask, in a large public setting. So the members share what their personal journey was to get where they are. And then you'd be quite surprised at how frank young people can be sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
they're not afraid to ask the hard questions. And I've been very grateful for 18 years that the members of Congress have been equally willing to answer, even if it's a hard question.
Other than inauguration, other big event as we wrap up here, what are you looking forward to this year?
You know, again, I'm going to speak to another signature education program. Probably 12 years ago, we had a class of 7th graders, which is typically the age that young people come to Washington. While they're here, we try to do a mini civics lesson for them. We ask them what the three branches of government are, because you can see two of the branches from the you can see the Supreme Court and the and the Capitol from here. Mm-hmm. And so you ask, what are the three branches of government? And the little boy who absolutely knew the answer, who was sitting right at my feet, insistent that he be chosen, said it was the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. So I shared that with one of my trustees, Sarah McKay of Lakeland, and that just weighed so heavily on her mind that she underwrote the beginning of an education program where we're taking civics down to the state, and we're working with school systems. Mm-hmm. We partnered with the Congressional Center in Philadelphia, yeah. And we take educators down, and we teach about the three branches of government, the Bill of Rights, the separation of powers. So that's an exciting thing that we're doing right now. We've had the opportunity to talk to a couple of the Supreme Court justices about a need for this, and that they're so keenly interested in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. The opportunity to impart this critical information to young people, it's both our privilege and our obligation.
Well, thank you so much for sharing the Florida House with me and what it's all about. This is my first time seeing it. I saw it on social media, the presence it's growing, and all the dignitaries from Florida that are from showing pictures. And I was like, you know, when I make it here, I'm going to come and check it out and see what it's all about.
We'll make you an ambassador. We're at the embassy. We're delighted that you took the interest and the time. And I hope that you'll be with us as we inaugurate a new president.
You can count on it. All right. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Special thanks to Bart Hudson, President and CEO of the Florida House on Capitol Hill, and Jordan Pick, Manager of Operations. She helped coordinate this interview. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to visit rotundapodcast.com to learn more about this program and to invite you to support what we do here each and every week. We're in our 90th episode, 90 weeks at this. There is a donate button on rotundapodcast.com. Your generous support is what keeps this program going. Become an underwriter by contacting me at rotundapodcast.com. And as always, thanks for your support.
First of all, I want to apologize from the get-go, because anytime I get in front of a large group of people and have a microphone in front of me, I have this irresistible urge to say, if you've been injured in an automobile, or on the job, or get food poisoning here today at this lunch, visit forthepeople.com. I'm your man.
All right, Orlando attorney John Morgan, medical marijuana man with all the For the People commercials. He went from Central Florida to the Panhandle to make a political announcement, and Bay News 9's Troy Kinsey also made his way to Pensacola, to be precise, to see what news Morgan had to drop. So Troy, how did it go?
Well, you know, Tramell, I think it's interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, John Morgan came to Pensacola, hotbed of conservatism in Florida, and I think he did that because if you look at the gubernatorial races in 2014 and in 2010, they didn't run very hard in the Panhandle, lost horribly up here, even though they overperformed among Democrats in South Florida and wound up losing. So I think John Morgan gets it, that to win a gubernatorial contest in Florida, you can't just write off the Panhandle.
And so I went out there, and I tried everything, and I kind of ran. It was almost like running a statewide campaign, except it was me, and it was one issue. And during that election, we lost by a point and a half. Devastating. And I really thought, because I spent so much money, listen, I made a bunch of mistakes, things I would never do again. But I made a bunch of mistakes, but I learned a bunch. But I was ready to walk away and not do it again just because of the millions of dollars I'd spent getting this done. But I will tell you why I decided to go forward. Once we lost thousands of people, and I'm not exaggerating with this. I am an exaggerator, but I'm not exaggerating with this. Thousands of people, tens of thousands of people wrote me, called me, begged me to go forward. They told me the stories of their lives. They told me the suffering of their lives and what this would mean to their lives.
I think he came here not to announce a campaign for governor, which he did not, but to test what could be a framework for a potential campaign with the people up here, with these conservative-minded voters. And the framework was very Trump-esque. He was basically hitting on economic populism and on his outrage about the fact that, you know, the living wage here in Florida has not risen appreciably over time, and that about two-thirds of Floridians are living paycheck to paycheck.
Our people, our workers, are not paid a fair pay for a fair day's work. The minimum wage in Florida and America is a joke. You can't live on $7 an hour. You can't live on $8 an hour. Try it. Any of you, don't go out and be homeless for a week. Just try to live on $7 an hour for a week.
Sounds a lot like Donald Trump in that regard. So I think to a large extent, John Morgan is taking a cue from that out-of-the-box 2016 campaign and potentially thinking about applying that to his own campaign for governor in 2018. Of course, we don't know if he's going to do this yet. I asked him if he was, you know, thinking very hard about it, if he had thought about maybe announcing today, and he said, no, I don't have to run now. I don't have to run for the better part of a year.
All of a sudden, people start talking about John, what's John want to do, which brings us to kind of the political climate we're in today, where all of a sudden these people are putting polls out and saying, what about John Morgan running for governor? And the truth of the matter is, the God's truth is, I never thought about it in my life. It's the last thing I ever thought about. You know, my son, with all due respect to politicians, my son Matt said, Daddy, why would you want to be a politician? Politicians are jokes. So, well, I don't know about that. But I don't know. Can you do the most good for the most people? I don't know.
I think today was a test run of the message that he might deploy if, in fact, he does run.
You know, I'm not all surprised at the Trump comparison. These two guys are both over the top. I just found it interesting, though, Troy, that this Democrat chose such a Republican area to test this news.
John Morgan was joking about how he talks to his friends, his Republican friends, because he is a very wealthy man. Wealthy people tend to be Republican. And he said they always give me a hard time. They go, yeah, come on, John, you're really a Republican. Why are you hanging out with a Democrat?
My Republican friends will always say to me, John, come on, you're really a Republican. Come on, dog. Just. But you know what? After this last election, I don't know what I am, and I don't know what we are. Do you? Do you know what you are anymore? So I'm flattered about this deal, but here's where I look at the world today, the Florida world today. Now look, even though I am a prominent Democrat, because for me, it's always been about what's best for the guy who can't take care of himself, what's best for the gal who can't take care of themselves. I'm not the most religious person in the world, but I do try to live that life. I do try to live the life of human dignity, food, water, shelter. Who's going to take care of those people? That kind of drives my politics. But my politics, if you went back and looked and asked all the politicians in Florida, you would find that I have raised and had people in my home millions of dollars to the Republican Party. Millions of dollars to the Republican Party. Millions of dollars to the Democratic Party in my home. I've got friends everywhere.
I think he has a unique appeal to Republicans in Florida, that a candidate like a Charlie Crist, who of course has been disowned by his former GOP, or a candidate like a Bob Buckhorn or Glenn Graham wouldn't have. And so I think he has this cross-cutting message, and he came to Pensacola to try that out. Very, very unique for about a potential Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Florida.
So what kind of reaction has he gotten from this?
Yeah, you know, I think it was pretty well received in the room. I think a lot of the people there didn't anticipate how moderate his message would be. He talked extensively, as you know, he does this all the time, Tramiel, but he spoke extensively about medical marijuana and about how it's not a Democratic issue, not a Republican issue. It's an issue of compassion.
I've seen it work firsthand in my own family, with my dad and my brother.
You know, frankly, the vote in favor of medical marijuana was resounding in 2016, and it had a very libertarian undercurrent to it. You know, keep government out of my life, especially when it comes to my health. The big hurdle, I think, for him is going to be, okay, if I get into this race, how do I win a Democratic primary? I don't think it's enough to raise money to be a prolific Democratic fundraiser. I think you have to have the support of the progressive grassroots. And so the question is, does coming here to Pensacola and speaking to an audience like this alienate that progressive base. If anybody can do it, it's John Morgan, but there is a risk in coming here and doing what he did today.
So how's the playing field shaping up with Gwen Graham and others stoking the flames about running?
As you know, Tramiel, nobody has announced, although I interviewed Philip Levine at the DNC over the summer, and I asked him about if he runs, what would his platform be? And he told me, listen, it's important to have people in government who have actually gotten things done in the private sector. He sounded very much like Rick Scott in that vein. And so we could be looking in Philip Levine at a Democratic Rick Scott, if you will, a very wealthy man, a man who could self-fund, who's had great success in the private sector, and who is now looking at running for higher office in Florida. John Morgan could make that argument as well. To the point about Gwen Graham, she has made every indication that she would like to run for governor, but she doesn't have a lot going for her aside from her name. People know who her father was, but she was only in Congress for 2 years, for one term. And the other potential problem for her is, well, her husband now, very unfortunately, has been diagnosed with cancer. And as you know, when you run these statewide campaigns, you have to be in it to win it. You have to give all of yourself to these campaigns. That could be an issue for her. And so, never say never. I think we'll get a better idea in the next few months about how the race is taking shape. At this point, you have two very interested candidates, potential candidates, in John Morgan and Phil Levine.
What if he doesn't run? What's up his sleeve to do next?
In this presentation was, John Morgan talked about, if I don't run for political office in 2018, I do want to sponsor a living wage amendment in Florida.
Yeah, prices may go up. Instead of paying a dollar for two tacos at Taco Bell, you may have to pay $1.20. Instead of paying $23 to go to my attraction over in Panama City, you may pay $24. That's okay. But right now, workers are not being paid fairly.
Now, I think, having observed this man, I think those two could go hand in hand in a gubernatorial campaign. They could have very much a symbiotic relationship. If you have a living wage amendment on the ballot, you drive up Democratic turnout. Democratic turnout, as you know, has been pitifully low in Florida in these gubernatorial election years, although that might change with Republicans in charge across the board in Washington. But potentially you could drive up progressive turnout. That would help not just the amendment, but also John Morgan's prospects as a Democratic candidate, should he become the Democratic nominee, assuming he runs for governor. And so that was breaking news as well, the fact that he is now thinking about sponsoring a living wage amendment. He passed an amendment in 2016 with medical marijuana. This could be the next big thing for him, and he could tie it in to a gubernatorial campaign.
That's Bay News 9's Troy Kinsey. That's it for this edition of the program. Special thanks to the staff at the Florida House on Capitol Hill, where I'll be for inauguration festivities, and also to Troy Kinsey at Bay News 9 for his report in Pensacola. Of course, special thanks to our hardworking intern, John Hines. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com, support the program, and share with your friends. And be sure to join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramiel Gomes.